Are you tired of stupid narratives and the endlessly spinning rumor mills? Then you have made the right decision, because you are listening to the second episode of the As We Podcast, a show dedicated to the finer points of the sport of football. My name is Konstantin Eckner, editor for Spielverlagerung. At my side are again two educated students of the game. First, I would like to welcome the editorial director of Spielverlagerung.de, and famous German internet personality, Tobias Escher.
Hello.
Tobias,
you're too kind to me.
I hope you are excited for your debut on our show.
Yes, I'm excited. My English is not the best, I have to admit, but I'll try.
Oh, you will be fine. So, and the third guy on our panel is Judah Davis, who apparently becomes a regular guest, and I believe you, the listeners, value his opinion very highly. So, Judah, how is it going?
Yeah, all good. Looking forward to this.
Like the first time, we will have three parts, so let's not waste any time and start with our first segment where we talk about the grander stage of European football. It's always great to watch the best teams of Europe compete against each other. Many of us are football fans because of these magic Tuesday and Wednesday nights. So we are happy the Champions League has started. The first match day delivered a few interesting results. Juna, tell us about the match you were interested in the most last week.
Yeah, so obviously Pep City were at home against Borussia Mönchengladbach. I thought that was a really interesting game because obviously Pep's made a fantastic start at City. They have 100% record. Beyond that, they've been playing some excellent football. Huge improvement from last season. And they're up against a Gladbach side that pose a different threat to a lot of what they've come up against for most of the season so far. They're aggressive, man-oriented pressing. They have good press resistance through quick and intelligent combinations that allow them to build up even under pressure. So they could pose some questions and some issues to City. But on the day, City were just very, very good. They blew Gladbach away, really. They rotated positions really well, opened up the 10 space, and particularly the movement of Zabaleta. Zabaleta was moving inside from his right full-back nominal position. When he made those movements late, he was able to receive the ball in front of his marker, had a bit of space, he can play it forwards from there. And yeah, generally it worked really well.
Yeah, thanks, Judah. Tobias, what about you? Any particular match that drew your attention?
Most of the time I watch the German teams because I have to do as part of my job, because I'm writing for different newspapers, for online magazines, and they're always asking me to write about German stuff. And so I watched Borussia Dortmund play in Warsaw. This was a very interesting game, I would say, because in the first games, Borussia Dortmund didn't look that great in the Bundesliga. But then against Warsaw, they tried a different structure. They integrated Rafael Guerreiro. I hope I pronounced him halfway right. My Portuguese is even worse than my English. He was had a very interesting role in midfield as a linking player who tried to he played a little bit like a number 8 role, but also much more versatile. And he was like the linking part between Weigl and Dembele, especially. But also an interesting role for Götze, who also played more like a number 8 than a number 10, who tried to give structure to the team by doing his off-the-ball runs. And was not so much focused, but it was very important in the creation of many attacks. It was a very interesting structure Dortmund played inside their 4-3-3 system. And there was like a little bit of a turning point in the season, the 6-0. They went on to win another 6-0 win in the Bundesliga, and now 5-1 against Wolfsburg, which are very impressive results for them.
Yeah, but speaking of Dortmund, they struggled against RB Leipzig, who is famous to be a pressing team. So could it be the case that maybe they will struggle against pressing teams, like really hard fighting pressing teams or really aggressive?
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see, because they had some issues in the build-up play in the beginning of the season. They tried to play more vertical this season with a faster direct approach, and this didn't work out well because they tried too hard against Leipzig, but Leipzig passing was too good. Now they played against three opponents who were very much man-orientated, and Dortmund had the right kind of movement. They were always switching positions. When one player was moving out of his position, another one came in and used the opened space that it was created when the man-orientated defender followed his opponent. And this is like what worked really well. So it's interesting to see if Thomas Tuchel will find answers against different kind of approaches.
Yeah, especially against better teams. So we will see how this plays out. But Dortmund is an interesting case. So let's keep the discussion going. And who could be the dark horse or the dark horses of this season's Champions League? Judah, any picks? Maybe Dortmund?
Well, yeah, for sure. I think Dortmund, I'm expecting them to reach probably at least the quarterfinals, to be honest with you. I think they showed a lot of great progression last season under Tuchel in his first season. And although they did lose some important players, they added several really exciting and interesting players. So they've got a lot of variability, good squad depth as well, better than last season, I'd say. So, yeah, I think they can push for the quarterfinals. Obviously, Emery just joined PSG, and I think, obviously, alongside the talents of Verratti, Di Maria, Maxwell, and the god Thiago Silva, they've got Unai Emery with his European record in particular, which is very, very stellar. I mean, three Europa Leagues in a row. So I think they should be a lot tougher this season. They should be a lot better in the European competition. So I'm expecting them to go, yeah, of course, maybe semis, and who knows, they could possibly win it. The dark horse. I think Sarri's Napoli. Now, I say this as dark horse. I don't think they're going to win it. I don't think they're really dark horses to win it either. I think they're dark horses in the sense that I'm not sure how many people all over Europe would have heard about them and the progress they've made. And then they could pop up in like the quarterfinals or the semifinals and people be like, oh, where did they come from? That kind of dark horse. So, yeah, because I think Sarri's Napoli are one of those teams who are quite complete in a strategic sense. So they've got a very strong and effective possession game, good compactness and defensive structure. They've got strong pressing, good counter pressing, and generally a strong transition defense. And yeah, they can counter attack pretty well. I mean, I don't want to build them up to be the best side ever, but I think they are quite good in several different aspects of the game. And they've made some good additions to their squad. Zielinski, Diawara, Tonelli, Rog, and Milik, the striker, to replace Higuain, has made an excellent start. So I think they can make a good assault in Europe this year.
Yeah, and again, a good counter-attacking game helps you when you play against the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona. So speaking of Real Madrid, what did you guys make of their performance on their first match day? They were down one goal against Sporting almost until the end of the match, and then before turning things around with two late scores. So, Toby, did you watch the match against Real?
Yeah, I watched part of the match. I didn't think this match in particular, I didn't think was lucky for Real, because they had some chances before and they had a decent structure with Kroos and Modric. But I do wonder in this season where the season is heading. I still don't quite know how they managed to win the last Champions League. Their structure wasn't overly good individually. They had, of course, they still have Ronaldo, but the problems that always occur when you play with Ronaldo, as he's a very, he's not the best player defensively, if you want to say it like this. And right now, the last game, I think in the last game in the league, they had over 40 crosses, I guess, which is unbelievable. It's like peak Moyes in his days at Manchester United. And this seems like they're a little bit helpless. They don't really make it to the number 10 spaces, to the spaces behind the striker. And so they always have to go all around the wings and become a little bit helpless. And I'm not sure yet where this season is going for them. I don't know if they still have as much luck as they had last season, because arguably they had luck in winning the Champions League. Even if you support them, you have to admit that up to the half, to the semi-final, they were pretty much very lucky with the draws from the UEFA.
Yeah, sure. The schedule favored them to some extent before entering the final, at least. And also, they won it after penalty shootout, so can speak about luck in this particular case. So, Judah, you've watched Real Madrid, their first match, and what do you expect from them?
I didn't see much of the game. I just caught some minutes of it, but they didn't really look much closer to sorting out these spacing issues that they've had, which are notorious, like the last 2 years. One thing I saw in the minutes I watched was Casemiro choosing some really weird and unnecessary moments to drop into the defensive line. And it's like creating unnecessary, redundant overloads, because there might be several players who help you progress the ball, but if they've only got one forward, you only really need two to make a calm build-up, which Pep was talking about earlier. I mean, also the forwards, like, as usual, showing quite a big focus on the last line. I think big disconnects. Really and truly, if you watch any Real Madrid match from the last season, you're going to see what I'm talking about. But I think, yeah, once you've got players like the god of Modric and guys like Kroos, Benzema, Marcelo, and Ronaldo bringing that goal-scoring potential, then you can go some way. But I'll be surprised if they repeat, their triumph of last season.
So, all right, let's just finish our first segment with a more general discussion. So it's always hard to make predictions, but we could change the angle a little bit. So the Primera División has dominated the international competitions for quite some time. They won many titles over the years. But will their dominance be broken this season? Could the Premier League, especially fueled by the ideas of many great coaches, Guardiola, Mourinho to some extent maybe, make a comeback? So could the Premier League come back and ultimately win the title or win titles again? So I don't know who wants to start.
Yeah, I guess there will be a Premier League comeback. I don't know if it's already this season, because Guardiola is working pretty fast in Manchester, I have to admit. He's very close to his idea, and he seems to adapt these ideas a little bit with some new structure for counter-attacking. He's trying to combine his positional structure with a more also with a more direct approach, but he still works very much with his idea of football, and I think they're working very fast, and I think they could win the title maybe. But I see like Chelsea, Manchester United, I didn't see them that strong at the beginning of the season, I have to admit. They still had problems, especially Manchester United with their structure. Again, another team struggling with possession when they have the possession of the ball. This will be something they have to resolve. But sure, there might be a comeback also, because I don't see Premier Division teams that strong this season. Barcelona might get a comeback or from their results. They still got a great team. But Real Madrid, as I said, I don't see them that strong. Sevilla is a very interesting team with Sampaoli as a coach, but they might need some time, as we could have seen against Juventus, where they didn't really get much forward, they were defending most of the time. His ideas need to be implanted. So I don't know, could be that the Premier League is coming back.
Okay, Judah, agree, disagree?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think Madrid, again, like you said, we don't really expect them to triumph. I think obviously with the talents they have, they can go some distance, but you don't expect them to triumph again. Barcelona, amongst the best sides in Europe, wouldn't really surprise you if they went on to win it. Atletico, same thing. In terms of England, like Tobias said, I don't think we can really expect much from the English sides this season. One of the things is some of the new coaches, like Conte, Klopp and Mourinho, they're not quite in the Champions League yet, as of now. Well, Mourinho's United are in the Europa League, but the other two aren't in Europe, full stop. So we can't really expect too much, obviously, for obvious reasons. I think I have a weird feeling, and I don't know why, but I just have a feeling that Bayern Munich are going to win the Champions League. And I think maybe it's like just to give the critics an opportunity to criticize Guardiola and just to give them the chance to ignore any contribution he has had to their success this season. I have a feeling that they're going to go on and win the Champions League. So in terms of the Europa League, like Tobias said, the Spanish clubs, I don't think their presence is too strong there this year.
Sure, and I mean, we can at least expect some Ancelotti magic happen in the Champions League. he has won the title often enough. So,
but I'm not sure. I'm not sure about Bayern winning the Champions League. Ancelotti also needs some time, and Bayern also has had some problems at the beginning of the season with preventing counterattacks, with gegenpressing. And this could become crucial in the KO rounds later on, in the knockout rounds. But it could also be that Ancelotti will try a counterattacking approach, and then it also depends on who the how the schedule looks like. It always looks like how the schedule looks like, but for Bayern, it will be especially important to get like Real Madrid side, for example, where they can really use their speed.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Also, I would like to see a Bayern Munich Manchester City encounter between Ancelotti and Pep Guardiola, because as you mentioned, maybe Ancelotti will try to focus on counterattacks, and then against a City side with Pep Guardiola on the sideline who wants to dominate the match, that could be something maybe in the semifinals, maybe even the final. That's a story the newspapers and websites would love, and also the analysts would love to see and then talk and write about. So I think that's it for our first part, and we are back after a short break. The Bundesliga is everybody's darling these days, but in my judgment, the league could lose a step. Pep Guardiola left, Dortmund lost several key players, Leverkusen and Gladbach might not be strong enough to keep up with Bayern and Dortmund. So Tobias, as an expert and as a successful book author who has written a book about German football, the history of German tactics, so I put you over now. So, Tobias, how do you view the state of the league in general? And can we expect another tactical revolution like we saw a few years ago?
Yeah, stop it. You don't have to be so kind to me. Come on, even if you don't do advertisement for my stuff. Yeah, I think it's like a turning point at the moment. We have to see where the Bundesliga will be in a couple of years. We've had this Guardiola approach in Munich, where he really implemented his idea of positional play, of possession-based football, where the players have to use their positioning, and where he always enforced the positioning of the players so they have the structure is superior against the opponent. And now the question is, will anybody in the Bundesliga follow up, or will the Bundesliga return to being a pressing and a counter-attacking league? And it looks like the latter at the moment, but there's Thomas Tuchel. There's, of course, one coach who's highly influenced by Pep Guardiola. And Thomas Tuchel's Dortmund side, I think they will try to get to still have a possession-based approach in the season, but also mix it with more vertical play. They already tried this, and I think he will work on this. And I think this is a very interesting side. I think they are the most interesting side in the league at the moment. Some in German, we used to say Borussia Dortmund is the most interesting project in Europe right now. And I think this is kind of true.
Yeah, but Tuchel is out there on his own in the fight for possession-based football, I guess, because many people are talking about RB Leipzig, counter-pressing team, about Gladbach, counter-attacking team, Leverkusen, of course, famous for their Roger Schmidt pressing. So, I mean, Dortmund is there, an interesting project, as you mentioned, but, I mean, is it the only project that really focuses on possession football?
Yeah, at the moment it pretty much is. Bayer Leverkusen tries to get some possession play pace. They try to be more flexible. They try to play with fluidity, and with the front four always switching positions. It's not working yet. I'm interested to see where this goes. And there's also some less known sites, so to say. For example, 1899 Hoffenheim, who have a very young coach, Julian Nagelsmann, who's 28, I think, and who also said he will try to implement some ideas of Guardiola. But they started with four draws in the league, and they still didn't really see the ideas. They either they were playing much at the back, or they were just trying to play very fast forward. So there's like still the, his words didn't follow deeds, so to say, as we say in German.
Okay, when we talk about Dortmund, of course, we have to talk about the summer transfer window, and three key players, namely Hummels, Gündoğan, and Mkhitaryan, left them. They made several signings, but I still see like an empty creative center. You mentioned, Tobias, it's a very interesting project. So, Judah, how do you rate them? Is Tuchel able to maintain this possession-based style, or do you think maybe they could lose a step and after the departure of Hummels, Gündoğan, and Mkhitaryan?
Yeah, well, obviously, I just want to start by saying that, in my opinion, after leaving Dortmund, were one of the most enjoyable clubs of the last 10 years. One of the most enjoyable teams to watch in the last 10 years. And that's obviously just based on teams that I have seen. So, you know, there are some teams, many teams that I haven't been able to watch. But in terms of those I have seen, they were one of the best. And like you've mentioned, the losses of Mkhitaryan, Gündoğan, Hummels has obviously put them in a tough situation in terms of sustaining that entertaining style, very enterprising, offensive approach. And I think they can maintain a similar style, but I think there might be one or two aspects in terms of their offensive approach that might have to shift slightly. Obviously, the likes of Mkhitaryan and Gündoğan were very combinative players who like a very collective approach in terms of their attacking. They're not individuals per se in terms of the way they act on the pitch. I think Hummels as well, obviously, a great influence on their build-up. The way him and Weigl staggered their positioning to sort of give Hummels the best, most amount of space to progress through the left half space, and combined with Gündoğan, combined with everyone. I mean, more in terms of his vertical passing, his diagonal passing, trying to create the conditions, basically, for him to progress. I think the likes of Dembele and Schürrle are a bit more individualistic attackers. Maybe thrive more in isolation situations, and so they might have to switch the sort of orientation of their attacks. It might become a bit less of a collective approach, a bit more focused on creating the conditions for Dembele, for Schürrle to isolate themselves against the fullback and progress from there. Like I mentioned with Hummels, they've replaced him with Bartra, who's also very good, very, very good with his passing, very good in build-up. But it's just a case of making different partnerships in terms of the way they build up again. Obviously, Weigl's got to build that understanding with Bartra and whoever else he's playing with, Schmelzer, Roda, Weigl. So, yeah, I think they can maintain a similar start, but it might have to shift a bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably the way it will go. And we talk about possession football in the Bundesliga, and we haven't mentioned Bayern Munich. Is it crazy? I watched Bayern's matches, the recent matches against Schalke, against Ingolstadt, and I have to say that we have to go back a few years to find a Bayern team that struggled that much to control the match against overmatched opponents. Tobias, do you already see the transition from Guardiola to Ancelotti football?
As you can see it very clear, because this very position-based approach, this positional play, they do not really follow these guidelines Guardiola had so much. They are now have freer roles, especially for the wingers, especially Ribéry, who has a very free role as a left winger, who's constantly going middle or giving widths right at the wing, depending on what how he feels like, so to say. The problem of this approach is that they can still they still have a lot of possession. They still pass around the ball a lot. They still focus. They now focus very much on the space, number six space, so to say, the space in defensive midfield where they try to start their attacks. But the problem is with their freer structure, they have a worse gegenpressing, so to say. They cannot win the ball back as fast as they used to under Guardiola. And Ancelotti pretty clearly said that he doesn't want to focus on this point of football. He said he wants to focus more on the transition after winning the ball, not on the transition after losing the ball. And that's was sometimes a problem in the last game against Berlin. It wasn't a problem. They had a very good build-up play there. But, for example, against Ingolstadt, where they won 3-1, but the expected goals model said that Ingolstadt should have won this 2-0 because Ingolstadt had really great chances because they could counterattack because the gegenpressing of Bayern Munich didn't work. So it's interesting to see where this will go because you can see a lot of Ancelotti already in them with a more direct approach, but you can also see some small downsides, especially in gegenpressing.
Okay, Judah, do you fear that maybe Bayern Munich will lose the it factor, so to say, with Ancelotti?
What factor?
The it factor. Like, they became famous last years for the special kind of football they played, but maybe it will get watered down now.
Yeah, I think that's most likely to be the case. It's possible that their style could be more to the entertainment of some fans. Some of their fans as well, actually, because I think, obviously, I don't know that much, but I did hear some, you know, fans were a bit disgruntled with the style of Pep Guardiola, not in terms of the results or success, because it was ultimately very successful, just that they felt Bayern had been more used to a more traditional German approach, more focused on transition situations and generally a quicker approach. So, you know, potentially the fans could enjoy a return to transition-based football that Ancelotti might implement. Although, obviously, being Bayern Munich, they are a team who are going to dominate possession. Even if they don't aim to, just by the virtue of their opponents sitting off and giving them more possession of the ball. So I think I've seen a couple of their games against Werder Bremen. You can't really take anything away from that game because Werder Bremen were very, very, very bad. I mean, I haven't seen a performance that bad for quite a long time. They were shocking. So, you can't take too much from that game. Their positional structure looked very basic, focused on little triangles and wide areas. They had the defensive mids moving to deep positions in the half space, fullbacks moving on really high and wide, and then the wingers stepping in off the line just to create that little triangle in wide areas that they progressed from. I mean, they were Werder Bremen, I think. Did I say Werder Bremen? It was Werder Bremen, right?
So taking this into consideration, and given the fact that Ancelotti has been very successful in the Champions League throughout his career, but sometimes struggled in domestic competitions, could this give other German title contenders the chance to actually beat the giant from Munich?
Yeah, one might think that way, but the Bundesliga, I think, is not strong enough at the moment because a lot of teams don't have the right match plan against Bayern Munich. They are, if you look at the Berlin game, for example, they were playing very deep against Bayern Munich and didn't really try to put pressure on the midfield or on the defenders, and that's still like a lot of teams don't have a lot of respect with Bayern Munich. We'll see if there will come teams that will try to use these weaknesses. And point number two, there's not really a contender. The only contender that might be is Borussia Dortmund, and of course with a new team you might never sure how this works out. Although they're looking really good and they might be title contender number one, but other title contenders like Gladbach, Leverkusen already lost some points in the league, already got already are behind Bayern Munich by 5 or 6 points or even more. And the only contenders who are behind is Dortmund, Cologne, Frankfurt, and Berlin, Leipzig, those teams that are not able to compete with Bayern Munich.
I guess Dortmund needs an almost perfect season to challenge Bayern, even in this season under, this first season under Ancelotti. Or Judah, do you disagree? Do you think Dortmund will win the title or could win the title?
I'd love to say yes. Honestly, I'd love to say yes, but I don't expect Bayern to be overthrown. I think one thing is they can, even if their performances aren't quite stellar, if they don't have total control of the game, they can be ruthlessly efficient. And that's like the case that we saw against Ingolstadt that Tobias was talking about earlier. They had 0.5 expected goals compared to Ingolstadt's 1.7, but they managed to win the game 3-1. 3 goals from 0.5 expected goals. That is unbelievable. Like, unbelievably efficient. Now, obviously, I shouldn't be praising that in terms of sustainability and things like that. But that just goes to show that even in the games where they might not have ultimate control of the game, they can still find a way to win. And I think that might be the biggest problem in terms of their competitors, so to speak. Borussia Dortmund, I think, should be quite strong this year. Like Tobias said, they've got themselves into a great run of form. 17 goals in the last 3 games. They've found a great role for Guerrero, Rafael Guerrero, I don't know how to pronounce it, in midfield. And so they're looking good, but I don't think that Bayern will be overthrown, to be honest.
Okay, great. I guess we can finish our second segment and go on to answering listener questions. Now it is time for our mailbag segment. Again, we are glad that so many people sent us questions. The first one is from Pete, at Gunnar Pete. So he's basically an Arsenal fan, and he asked about Arsenal. What is the idea behind the new role of Francis Coquelin at Arsenal? Many of us want to understand this weird thing. And also another question, we can put it together. Kartik at Chennai Gunnar asks, can you talk about Arsenal's issues this season, especially the central midfield one? What could be the reason to play Coquelin ahead of Kanechaka? And what is the best 11 and formation considering Arsenal play most of the game in possession? Judah, would you like to take the question?
Sure. Questions? I'll start off with Coquelin, for example, the role of Coquelin in the question. I've only watched one Arsenal game fully this season, but I think this idea is that the Coquelin is playing a lot higher than his partner in the double pivot. I think that's what this confusion is about. So in that game, Coquelin was playing a lot higher than Elneny as well. I think the idea is probably just as simple as removing Coquelin from deep build-up situations because they want to reduce the impact of these limitations, really. So I think that's the main idea, taking him away from that situation and moving him into higher positions. Then again, that lacks full complexity because even from a higher position, your positioning is going to affect how the build-up is and how effective the build-up is. So I think that was one of the things that caused them a lot of issues. In that game, really, it was just about terrible structures, especially against the midfield compactness of Liverpool. They didn't really have players who could receive behind Liverpool's front three forwards and just in front of Liverpool's three midfielders. And that area is really, really intense and compact from that Liverpool side. They really do press and squeeze that area. You need to be very, very press resistant and have the good structures around you to sort of play away from that area. And Arsenal had neither of those qualities in that game. In general, their issues this season, I think most Arsenal fans that are listening to this would probably have seen Tom Payne's article for The Ringer on Arsenal's issues. I mean, if you haven't, I recommend you read it. It's also funny that many of the long-term issues or crisis of Arsenal that René Marich detailed in his analysis all the way in 2014 are still relevant, despite the differences in the makeup of the squad. And it's quite a damning indictment on Arsene Wenger, I think. Essentially, for me, the build-up in the general offensive spacing is not properly coached. The players are quite clearly acting on their own inspiration, and it creates issues in terms of synergy. It creates issues in terms of cohesion, and it has impacts on different phases of the game as well, especially once they lose the ball. Transition defending is quite weak. Furthermore, they seem to have adopted a very, very passive defensive strategy in the last few years, particularly in their own half. And it's really baffling because it's even the case at times, even when they're losing a match, they're just still very passive, waiting in their defensive lines and just, trying to stay compact, but even the compactness isn't good. So, it causes issues with access, and then when that's combined with their incohesive system, it creates some easy penetration for the opponents. In terms of best formation, there is no best formation for the squad. Personally, if I was manager, I'd like to use a asymmetric 4-3-3. So that's just Cech, Monreal, Koscielny, Mustafi, Bellerin. Bellerin a bit higher on the right than Monreal, probably. And keep Xhaka at holding mid. Have Ozil on the left of the 4-3-3, but quite advanced. And then Cazorla on the right of it, quite deeper, assisting Xhaka with the build-up. And also being that link player, sort of box-to-box playmaker. I'd have Ramsey on the nominal right wing position, but since Bellerin is like really, really good in terms of his offensive contribution, Ramsey can sort of shift in, add to the presence between the lines. I'd have Sanchez in a really diagonal, aggressive attacking role on the left. Giroud or Lucas Perez up front. I think Giroud works really well with those. But if you need a bit more presence in behind, depending on the opponents, then perhaps you could go Lucas Perez.
All right. Yaniv Maman, or Maman, at Yaniv MM on Twitter, writes, can you discuss Dortmund's central midfield, various personal options versus various opponents? How do you rate Sebastian Rode in the Dortmund central midfield? Can't see his value unless they are in a 4-2-3-1 against possession-orientated teams, Tobias.
Yeah, interesting, because I pretty much agree with that. Although I do rate Sebastian Rode. Maybe Tuchel himself answered the question by using different setups in midfield. They started the season with a two-man, with a 4-2-3-1, with double... how do you call it? Double pivot? No, is it right?
Yeah, you can, yes.
Yeah. Sebastian Rode and Gonzalo Castro. Gonzalo Castro usually plays wide, and Sebastian Rode, who's a very vertical player, who likes to push forward, who's like very fast, who's always looking for the direct passing option in front of him. But also he can be kind of messy, because he loses the ball, he is not playing very precise in passing, but also in when he gets the ball, he tends to lose him sometime. So he's not this kind of player like Julian Weigl, who controls the game. So I personally think Julian Weigl is the most important player in the midfield for Dortmund, and you could see this in the beginning of the season when he was away first, and then he was like not doing a good game against Leipzig. There's all great, I don't have to say much about this, because there's a great article on Spielverlagerung.com why Weigl is the most important player. I think it was TP who wrote the article.
Yes.
The new option that came up after it showed up that this setup is Rode, the vertical player, does not work against teams who only try to shut down defensively. They put in Guerrero in midfield, who was like also very, very focused player, a player with a great technique, and who can pass the ball and get like a whole with a high accuracy. And he's like the linking point now, and it's like the linking point between this more direct approach, but also with a possession based approach, who knows when to pass the ball back to Weigl or to the defenders. And so this is like at the moment my favorite, personally favorite setup with. Weigl in front of the defense and Guerrero and Götze at number 8 or Castro at number 8 if you want another option there. And this kind of worked kind of well in the last games. And Rode might be an interesting option when it comes games against Bayern, for example, where they can use a counter-attacking, or even Real Madrid when they play against Real Madrid. I personally would like to see Rode play as a right back from time to time, because I think that suits his abilities, because he's a very fast player who also has a good movement when it comes to moving forward. And this might be an interesting idea, and Pep Guardiola tried this some in some games, and I know that Thomas Tuchel would like to try this too. Let's see if Rode gets a chance there.
All right, and we see Rafael Guerrero, Ref Guerrero. He's like the surprise of the early season, so signed as a promising left back and left winger, now turned midfielder, center midfielder, even playmaker to some extent. That's really interesting as far as Dortmund goes. So the next question is for Judah. Sean, at Sean Gunnar asks, we have a lot of Arsenal fans apparently, he asks, with more elite clubs favoring sweeper keepers, should youth teams integrate their goalkeepers more into general training / drills?
Yes, quite simply. I think that's a given, 100%. There are obvious benefits in using them in match simulation. So like at the end of a training session where you get the guys together just to play a little match. And obviously it makes it more realistic once you've got actual goalkeepers in there. So that's just an obvious benefit of using them. But even in possession games and rondos, we've seen they can be easily integrated, and it can improve their ball work and in really opposed practices, as opposed to a lot of what you see goalkeepers do in their training separate from the team, and they just practice striking balls to their partners and receiving them. But we know about unopposed practice like that, it lacks the realism, and it can be difficult sometimes and put them in a slightly odd situation when you try and take something you've practiced in an unopposed situation and use it in a completely different situation. So it's good to allow them to improve their ball work in actual opposed practice with the general team. This could be as simple as using them as inside players in the rondo, outside players as well, and perhaps even the spare who plays for both sides, just to give them as many touches as possible, give them a better idea of the proper movements to make once you're in possession as well. Because that can be important. You can see, for example, goalkeepers like Claudio Bravo, Marc-Andre ter Stegen, the way they move away from their goal to make connections with their teammates and make switches, really, really important against pressing teams. Bravo's movement was fantastic against Manchester United. Ter Stegen against Athletic Bilbao, fantastic movement, allowed them to circulate the ball and get beyond Bilbao's press. So, yeah, I think this is a definite. They really, really should be integrated into more sessions.
All right, and to close our show, we have a really big one, really big question from Samu Varga at Samu Varga on Twitter. So he asked, how do you recreate a football culture in a country which was dominant 50 years ago, but has been suffering now for decades? Apparently, he is, of course, speaking about Hungary. We had a golden team in the 50s, playing in the World Cup final with Hidekudi, Puskas, Kostic, a really great team, but yeah, they have been suffering now for decades, as he wrote. So I don't know who wants to answer first.
Sure. It's a tough one. I think
it's not really a question you can answer. It's more like giving your opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Without knowing much about what football's like in Hungary, I can talk, you know, from a general perspective. I think it's always important to have a long-term plan when you're trying to rebuild something or trying to build something from scratch. Important to have a long-term plan that allows not just it to improve immediately, but to improve after a while and have sustained improvement. So if you just have a short-term plan, it's like, okay, we're going to fund, I don't know, this group of players, give them more training sessions or something like that, you could get a really golden period, but then afterwards you could struggle to have sustained improvement. So it's important to improve things like infrastructure, facilities, that's going to allow a more sustained improvement over a long period of time. I think so. Yeah, infrastructure, facilities, that kind of thing is really important to improve the standard of those. Coaching is another really important factor, because without good coaches, you struggle to make the players. Got to have programs in place to have good coaching pathways that allow you to create better coaches and in turn facilitate the improvement of players over a longer period of time. So those are a couple of things for me, I think.
Toby, I guess you have something to add.
Yeah, I think he's right. The problem is always that the past is always more interesting than the present, so to say, if you look at Hungary, for example. Because you can't recreate the kind of football they used to play in the 50s today, because you don't have the players. You have to start with small steps, and you have to you have to really use a concept. I think Austria did a quite good job. Also, they failed at the Euros, but they really reset their whole youth system some years ago. They reset their national team. They were working more focused. They're working with a specific tactical system they try to play, which didn't work at the US, as I said, but you see that there's some kind of progress and that there's really some kind of plan behind this, and that people in Austria start less and less to talk about the past and more about the future. And this is like what is the cultural switch we have to make as a nation, as a football nation.
Yeah, I agree. And looking at Hungary's past only for a second, I mean, you should also take into consideration that there are political reasons that many players left the country, and also the landscape of football, of European football, has changed. I mean, back in the day, clubs like Ferencváros, for instance, they played in the what was then the European Cup, the Champions League, so to say, but they played maybe in the quarterfinals. So, and nowadays it's really dominated by a few leagues, and there's not much room for Eastern European clubs, not only from Hungary, also from Czech Republic, Poland, and so on and so on. So it's really, the landscape has changed. But you both made great points, I guess, about maybe how can we create or restart something that was great 5-6 decades ago. All right. I think that's it for our second episode, and we will be back in a few weeks. You can find our episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on our website under spielverlagerung.com/podcast. I would like to say thank you, gentlemen. Thank you to Mr. Tobias Escher, at Tobias Escher on Twitter.
Thanks for inviting me.
And thank you to Judah Davis, at 1415 football on Twitter.
Thank you.
I am CC_ECKNER on Twitter. And also, I would like to thank our listeners for sticking with us. For now, we are out.